This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
So good afternoon, good friends, good afternoon. Again from our friends on video, Kaveh and Don. And we have a new friend with us today. So we'll go around and just introduce ourselves. Carolyn.
Judy.
Michael.
Marika.
Wei.
Curtis.
Jane.
Chuck.
Jerome.
Laura.
Bill.
Pamela. Emily.
So good you could join us today, Laura. We've seen you in video, and so good you could be here today. So we're moving toward the larger place. We've actually been in the large place the whole time, but we'll be finishing with our study of the precepts today as we go out into the world. But it's been such a rich and beautiful sesshin with the full moon and the full moon ceremony. And beginning today, when the moon was still up, in the west, maybe a little northwest, we came in and we had this beautiful offering of tea from Jiro. So I want to thank you for offering that and sharing that with us. And also I want to thank Emily for asking the questions that, these wonderful questions that I thought we were all interested in. So Jiro could share with us a little history and some of the background and some of the way the tea ceremony involved, and also the bowls. And it was really beautiful to hear that. So the precepts will be looking at today are the 10th and the 6th. And the 10th is the last one in the grave precepts. It's not abusing the three treasures. And that, when I first heard that, first of all, and started practicing, it confounded me. I just couldn't get it. Like, well, why would anyone abuse the three treasures? I mean, how could that be? I mean, we're practicing here, and we're why would you abuse the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha? I mean, how could you even do that? So as time went on, I got a little more understanding of what that can entail, and why that's one translation of the grave precepts. So, so in one way, looking at the Buddha treasure, and this is kind of paraphrasing from Dogen, that the Buddha is actually Anyuta Samyuk Sambodhi. So the Buddha is a historical figure and was a person, but Buddha represents, and all the Buddhas and our teachers, our ancestors, represent a complete, perfect awakening. That's what that means in Sanskrit. So So it means being attuned to that. And that can happen in an instant when we are attuned to it. So maybe you could say one way of abusing the Buddha is abusing our own complete, perfect, enlightened nature, which is part of the chant of the Heart Sutra. It can happen at any moment, and that what we do is realize that we're already awakened. We're part of this big, inseparable reality that includes the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And we just, because of who we are as humans, kind of find it easier to look at it or to somehow comprehend it in segments or dividing it up. But what we've been practicing and what we can practice every day in our lives when we keep attuned to this is that we're part of this inseparable reality that is Buddha nature, our Buddha nature, Buddha human nature. So, and this is like another aspect that that comes up. Well, what about the deluded nature we have? Well, that's all part of it too. It's all part of the complete non-separate, inseparable reality. So we can't throw out any of it. We can try to understand it. We can accept it. So our perceptions can be deluded, our thoughts can be deluded. And where that shows up is thoughts of separateness, particularly in relation to others or to the world we live in. So that's the deluded part of nature. So there's an ancient metaphor called Indra's net that comes from the Sanskrit and from India before it was even Hinduism, part of Indian philosophy and way of looking at the world and spiritual practice. And Okumura Roshi, a great translator of Dogen, who's still alive and teaching, he uses that metaphor to kind of point to how we can be deluded and yet we're all part of it. So Indra's net is cosmic. It covers everything in the cosmos. So the universe and all the universes. And it's like a fisherman's net. And what we tend to see are the knots. So particularly our own little knot, our node, but there are all these nodes that spread throughout the cosmos. And what we don't see is the connectivity. It's like the line that makes the net, that makes the knots. Those are invisible, like fishing line. So all the vast conditions that arise in the cosmos are part of this net. So understanding that no one is outside of this, even dropping the metaphor, we're not outside of anything at all that's happening everywhere. And tuning into that is a way of not denying our Buddha nature and Buddha's Buddha nature. So there's another way of talking about this. If we engage with and perceive all these myriad things that we can't perceive everything all at once, of course, but all the things that we can perceive, then we are, in a sense, we can perceive other things happening and arising when we tune in. That's what Buddha talks about, or what Dogen talks about in the Genjo Koan. So a way perhaps to look at this is, well, what can I tune into? How can I? It's like we can learn from anything that we come across, and we can see how we are part of that in anything. What can an ant teach us? What can a cloud teach us? What can another human being teach us, whether we like that human being or not? What is, all these things are ways of waking up once we become attuned to them and keep aware of them to the best we can, and including, as I said, our delusions. We can't talk about things. It's a little like physics when they talk about, you know, the perceiver and the wave and the particle and the perception and what's actually going on. Nobody's figured out a way to talk about it. The scientists, even the Buddhists. So they use analogies, they use language, which we've talked quite a bit about language this week. And we'll touch on it a little bit more with the other precept, with the sixth precept. But so the idea is not to get caught in Indra's net, or not to think we figured it out. We just really want to latch onto things. That's part of our nature too. And whenever we notice we're latching on, that's fine. We can just say, okay. And then be awake to what arises next. We can be awake to the next fresh thing. What can we learn from a flower? Like Genjo Koan also, Dogen talks about when we cling to the flowers, that's when they fall. That's when they fall off. And so by continuing to practice, we can all have those experiences, and many, many human beings have of awakening in our tradition, and this is a tradition that makes them explicit and talks about them, the Buddha Dharma, and specifically in Soto Zen. There are a lot of beautiful words, but those are just experiences. And then we don't know what's going to come next, the next beginning of another awakening. And it could be not pleasant. Could be really strikingly unpleasant, even horrific, but that can be a cause of awakening if we're alert to it. The fresh experience. So Buddha, Dogen says, birth, death, delusion, enlightenment, sentient beings are all Buddha. And also, no birth, no death, no delusion, no sentient beings. Those are all Buddha too. So it's a way of allowing a place for not getting caught. We can't say yes, we can't say no. It's both and, it's everything. Both and. He also says, weeds grow when we dislike them. So that's when where we get caught in our delusions, when we really don't like something. We say, okay, that's that, and I don't like that. That's something gardeners come across quite a bit. What's a weed? It's a plant in the wrong place. because I didn't put it there, or I don't like it there. And as a gardener, I come across this often. And then try to look and see, well, why is that plant there? Maybe even more simply, or I could answer that question, well, it's there because that's a soil, or it likes that companionship with that other plant. Yes, and that can become a beautiful thing, to just see how things coexist, how things get along together. And yet, at the same time, we may not want to let one thistle take over our whole garden. You know, we may need to get rid of that, some of those things. So this is all part of Dharma. All these teachings that other creatures and we ourselves can give ourselves. And living with those, being at one with those. And then the third part of the three treasures is the Sangha. So, and Dogen says, peace and harmony are the Sangha in oneself and with others. But Sangha is something. Sangha. People are Sangha, but also all the other animals and the plants and everything we live with is Sangha. Everything in the universe even, but certainly just keeping down to the ground that we live on, all of that. Even the fires, the earthquakes, the tsunamis, it's all Sangha. And of course, people Sangha, we love Sangha until somebody difficult for us comes along. And then it's maybe not so easy to love Sangha. And it's not so easy to love all these natural events like fire and earthquake, floods. But maybe we could just open to them a little bit, not denying their horrificness, not denying, but bringing together fire, flood, earthquake, no fire, flood, earthquake. So, and I mentioned the four integrative methods of the Bodhisattva, one of Dogen's talks. And in terms of giving, and the first precept, or the second precept, and he goes on, he has four. And several of those relate to Sangha. And he says, beneficial actions towards all beings. That's what's really helpful. and all beings, including those parts of ourselves that are hard to, that we find difficult or hard to accept. Beneficial actions. Even when people's values may be opposed to ours, how can we reconcile that? That's something we each figure out for ourselves as best we can. One way he expresses it is, it's non-opposition to oneself or others. He also mentions cooperation. His beneficial action is the third, and then there's cooperation. The second is kind speech and the mind of kindness, and we talked about that quite a bit the other day. But no opposition. And he uses the metaphor of the ocean. He says the ocean accepts everything. That's how it becomes immense. It's not reactive, not setting apart. So finding those ways to not set apart. He says one should face everyone with a mild countenance. So we talked a little bit about that too in speech, remembering how we look, how we feel inside. We're really practicing to be happy. The Buddha said that, I believe I mentioned that earlier as well, but it's something that I find worth remembering. Everyone seeks for happiness. And no one deserves happiness more than oneself. So, another way to phrase this 10th precept in the positive way is of honoring the three treasures. Respecting the Buddha ancestors and the Buddha nature in all, and unfolding the Dharma in our actions and words, and nourishing the Sangha in any way we can. And we have all been the beneficiaries of this, been so nourished by Emily and all of our actions that have helped us be here together and unfold the Dharma and see our Buddha nature, be with our Buddha nature. So I thought to end with the sixth precept because it's a way of, the positive precepts are a way of enacting the prohibitory precepts in the world. And for me, this one's about sanghas. See the perfection is one way to talk about that. Or see the given and perfect it. Create wisdom from ignorance. And kindly speech to oneself and others, not speaking of others' faults, is part of the sixth precept. And then abstain from dwelling on past mistakes. And that's a really one that is very, a precept that I work with a lot. I mean, I think I'm not unique. We're all recovering perfectionists, particularly in this culture where there's such an emphasis on doing everything right and doing and being the best we can be. But it's also true of all cultures in a way, because we're all socialized. So we all get conditioned very early and deeply to that's the wrong way to do that, or that's the right way to do that. So that's just another part of the Buddha honoring, seeing that that too is like just what we are. It's fine that we want to do our best and be ourselves, be our best, but not to not to keep remembering our past mistakes. And last night that was really brought home to me again when we, as we went through the full moon ceremony, when at the end, after the precepts and refuges, we had the opportunity for acknowledgments of past mistakes. So sometimes we need to acknowledge past mistakes, not dwelling on them. Dwelling is the key word there. And so as I was walking back to the Zendo from the ceremony, then I thought of three other things I should have acknowledged to the Sangha. But set those aside. And then coming into the Zendo and doing the beautiful Pali chant, the refuges and the bows. Then by the time I got back to my room, I couldn't remember what the mistakes were that I should have. So we can let things go. I wanted to end today with with a poem from Nyōgen Senzaki. And this, I've given some of you a little brief introduction. I'll say again briefly, he was a monk, a Rinzai monk, one of the very early ones in the 20th century in America, lived in Los Angeles, led a humble life, and was evacuated from his home and taken to a concentration camp at Cloud Mountain in Wyoming. So he led the people there in practice for the whole duration of the Second World War. And he wrote some really beautiful poems about that experience, about honoring Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. And this one is from December 10th, 1944. So still in the war, which didn't end until May of 1945. Still in the camp. He says, "Mountains and rivers do not conflict. Grasses and trees live harmoniously. Nature itself manifests loving kindness. 84,000 kinds of delusions cover the eyes of mankind. Mankind dreams the whole world in a fighting mood. It does not see the morning star as the Buddha did, unless people enter into Zazen." And I can't read my own writing here. Sorry. And removes himself from his own conflicts. He does not see in the same way the Buddha did, unless mankind enters into deep Zazen and removes himself from his own conflicts. then he can comprehend the beautiful cooperation of the universe. So I thank you for your attention, and I invite you to say, enter this dialogue we're having today about the three treasures and about not dwelling on past mistakes and seeing the perfection. Chiro.
Thank you for broadening the sense of Sangha so beautifully.
Bill.
I thought turtles out there that are really good at Zazen. Turtle is just like a rock with the head and legs. Thank you. It's Pamela, we'll have time tomorrow to give compliments to people and stuff. Right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'll focus on the Dharma. Thinking about the full set of precepts, and I guess from the Vinayas, there are all these ones that seem extremely old-fashioned or might even be confusing. Like I remember one about not sleeping on high beds. So I don't think that's a big problem today, but I think it's really interesting to think about the inverse. Like, what are problems that people are having today that might have been a precept if Buddhism was just arising now? And this is something that I think comes up, especially people who are just maybe getting, like in an intro to meditation class or something, people who are just getting into it might be looking for guidance aside from like just sit down and face the wall. I mean, that's, maybe they want that, presumably, but are often looking for guidance more broadly. And the things that have come up for me are social media, I think mostly just toxic, maybe not 100%, but 92% or something. So maybe if, we were making new precepts today, vowing to delete Facebook, which I think it would be healthy for most people. And I also evangelize about driving less sometimes. I think it, there's some kind of lizard brain thing that happens in a car that makes people just behave like crazy. And, sort of challenge yourself, like, is there a way I can live that's where I don't drive so much? I think maybe not 92% toxic, but 60% or, so for what it's worth, some thoughts on that. And I don't know if anybody else has commentary on that, on what kind of modern day precepts might be.
It looks like Mike might have a comment.
Yeah, I just think, if you read the precepts, everything in human nature is covered. There's nothing that isn't covered today, last century, 100 years from now. I mean, there is nothing. I mean, okay. You can have, something that covers a printing press, but no, it's just human nature. It's just, there's basic human nature, basic kindness, basic decency. I don't think that changes with the times. It may change culturally. I mean, cannibals killed and ate the brains because that's how they pass knowledge on. We don't do that. But what the, you know, but I mean, that's a cultural. But I mean, I don't think there's anything new under the sun, honestly. I used to think the precepts were old-fashioned. Like, but if you read them, it's just, it could have been written today. You know, it just rules out of hate. Except for the silly ones, you know, they'll sleep in high beds. But that's a translational problem, I think. And I guess that comes, a lot of that comes down to translational problems. We're translating something from many thousands of years ago. The writer by Buddha was illiterate, so he never wrote anything down. So now we have the scribes that supposedly wrote down all his words, but really, they're the scribes' words. You know, it's, but I think that it's all there. In a nutshell, it's written really well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. I could say I agree with that human nature and the precepts. That's one of the gifts of the Mahayana, is that it focuses a little more generally. But thank you, Bill, for bringing that in and those early precepts. And I think it's good to give examples and talk about how it might be, maybe not a precept, but just to give examples of, we touched on that earlier this week about intoxication. There are many ways to intoxicate. So all these are just examples of how people get off. And in the Buddhist time too, the high beds, I always interpreted that as putting, you know, being modest, putting yourself up like kings got on thrones. Kings slept in high beds, you know, and or rich people that thought they were of a social class, because Buddha taught when there was social class, maybe before, I don't know all the history exactly, maybe before caste was well established, but there was certainly caste kind of hierarchies in the Indian culture in which Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, grew up. So they were, you know, examples of that. And of course the Vinaya, I mean, once monks started living together, they started transgressing. So there are, you can go into the whole 200 or 180, and then the women had to do more for some reason, which they didn't even relate to being women, the ones that I've read, but nevertheless, they had to do them. But it was like, you can't eat, don't eat all the ripe mangoes or something like that, because you're taking food from, you know, the other creatures. So people, that's part of the human nature too. So there were kind of contextual reasons, and that's what you're bringing in. There does need to be in context, and to whom you're speaking as well. Yes. So consider the audience and what would make it real and kind of alive for them. So I don't know as far as going a precept, though. A precept is and the vows of the eight that you take when you do a long term of study in early Buddhism, when you do for a month or 3 months, including the high beds and not wearing jewelry and not eating after the main noon meal, no food at all. Those are all still point to the more human nature ones of not being greedy, not putting things on oneself to make oneself stand out. You know? So those all had a kind of a relationship to the more maybe abstract seeming Mahayana ones. Thank you very much for sharing that. Yes, enlightenment can come at any moment and through any sense door, like the famous examples are on the toilet, hearing a shrill sound, hearing a siren, hearing a pleasant sound. So that's the part about that Dogen talks about, and all the teachers really, including everything, not shutting out anything, and yet knowing that it's all we have to use as words to, we make these distinctions, but it's all a piece of us and our Buddha human nature. Thank you. Kave.
I want to say something based on what you said. And I'm conscious that I speak, but I'm not speaking for myself. You mentioned something which I don't exactly remember, but it was what, delusion and enlightenment. And when you said that, and they're all both Buddha, in a way, Buddha nature. A memory flashed to me, how sometimes the vulnerable people, the ones that are not measuring up, are the ones that open all hearts. And like a Buddha, they teach, even if it's unintentional. I remember I had a friend, I remember several examples from my life, but one is from Zen, from the Sangha. He is and was a Norwegian trombone player, jazz trombone player. He was very disturbed. His parents had died. He had done a lot of drugs. So we used to, as a Sangha, we used to serve in the Zendo or Yoki style, more formal than Jikoji, and it was all choreographed. And he would just get lost in the Zendo. And people would say, Taye, here. And it was like, I was like so upset, why are the teachers making him do this? But he would just bring so much love out of people. He was a teacher of love in that group. One time, Suzuki Roshi's son came to the Zendo, came to stay, and they put a dinner in his honor. And they asked Taya to play the trombone. He got up to play in a little Sangha house, and he just froze. He couldn't play. And he turned around and went in the back room, and the door was open. I turned around and looked. He knelt down. He couldn't play. The next day, so everybody was like stone silence. Somebody said, hey, somebody else sing to kind of break the atmosphere. The next day, we heard this beautiful, beautiful melody in the forest of him, like just riffing, like on his trombone, beautifully. When the pressure was gone, he was just like flowing. So anyway, I rambled, but it's not always the looking good that's the point. It's not always the looking good that's the point. Actually, I don't think it's ever the looking good, that's the point. But it's being true, that's the point. Whatever you are, however you are, and that's your gift. The weeds are flowers in that way.
Thank you, Kaveh.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.